It is Sunday, the 14th of December, 2025. I'm Anthony, VK6AXB, and welcome to News West. Yep, this week I'm having a go at doing the news. You can tell there's a skills shortage. Fortunately, everyone else on the broadcast is pretty skilled. Here's one of them now.
As this article goes to air, Ham College has just completed a very busy year, having trained around 50 new foundation operators and coached another 10 or so amateurs through to their standard and advanced exams. The year is finishing on a high with a refurbishment of our training aids, providing individual radio kits for each pair of students to assemble, each consisting of a radio, VSWR meter, antenna and power supply, a revised training pack, and we are about to purchase and install a six-band trapped vertical so we can once again have a club station on air for training, contests and just general use of the members. We continue to have a robust team of instructors for all classes of licence, but are always keen to have more instructors to add to the team. You don't need to be an assessor, that's only required to supervise examinations. We're also taking names for the standard and advanced course for 2026, which will start in March. Interest in any of our training courses, or if you would like to join our team of instructors, or even just give a helping hand, email us on enrolments@hamcollege.org.au. We'd love to hear from you.
Good afternoon, evening, noon, and welcome to this Parks on the Air update. We have a few new parks added over the last couple of weeks, focusing on the Fremantle and North Fremantle areas. Most of these parks are very easy access, have room to set up your portable rig, and some could be activated from your vehicle. The Fremantle Roundhouse is a former prison and now historic monument. It has been allocated park reference AU10954 and is as yet unactivated. This is a pedestrian-only park and will require a self-standing antenna with no ground penetration. As it's a stone's throw from the ocean, there should be no problem getting contacts. Let's see which of our dedicated activators gets this one first. The Parks on the Air Support Your Parks weekend are held once per season and promoted to encourage people to get into the parks as a group. In WA, mid-year, we held two separate meetups, one in the southwest and one in Perth Metro, to allow as many people to attend as possible without excessive travel. The next Support Your Parks weekend is the 17th and 18th of January. No fixed points have been set, so we're open to suggestions. Ideally, the sites are easy access, multiple overlapping park sites to maximise the recorded score for all concerned. Don't feel there is any pressure to bring your own radio, as there will be a few others set up who will be more than happy to hand over the mic to get you involved. POTA is an excellent way of promoting the hobby, so please mark the 17th and 18th of January in your diary and come along. Visit POTA.app, which is POTA.app, which is a web page, not an app. This is Darren, VK6EK, WA Coordinator for Parks on the Air.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? This week I thought I'd talk about solar power design principles for radio and repeater sites. This is written around principles for a repeater site with no access to mains power or any other charging source. If you have a panel on a couple of batteries in your camper van with a charger connected to your vehicle charging system, then this is not what this is about. Like all engineering projects, it's always good to start with defining the requirements. If it is a repeater site, you could do worse and follow what's standard practice for commercial and public safety sites. The requirements in real basic form are often 5 days of autonomy with no charge. In other words, the battery will run the site for five days. Charge is back to full capacity within 10 days from 0% charge. Work on a 5% duty cycle in transmit. This equates to 1.2 hours of transmit time per day. Even on the most popular repeaters in Perth, I doubt we would reach that anything like that on average. So how do we design to this? First thing is to determine the current draw over a 24-hour period. Did I mention understanding the requirements? With 5% duty cycle, that equates to the current draw of the radio in receive with no receive signal for 95% of the day. Most repeaters will draw on the order of an amp or so in quiescent mode, so that equates to 24-hour amp hours times 95% of 24 hours, or 22.8 amp hours. Add to that the 5% in transmit mode. Let's just assume 10 amps in transmit mode. And you get 10 amps times 24 hours times 5%, or 12 amp hours, bringing your total power consumption to 34.8 amp hours. With this in mind, you need a battery with the ability to deliver 34.8 amp hours times 5 days to achieve our requirement of 5 days of autonomy. This equates to 174 amp hours at 12 volts DC. There are some around who will then tell you that you can only take the battery down to 50% charge, so you'll need double that battery capacity. Time to take out some of them sacrificial cows. Here are a few facts about sealed lead-acid batteries. If a battery is rated to 200 amp hours at C120, then this means that it will deliver 200 amp hours over a period of 120 hours, which just happens to be 5 days. The quicker you discharge a battery, the less capacity it will deliver. If you discharge a battery every now and again to 0% charge, i.e. you draw 200 amp hours from this battery over a period of 5 days, the battery will be fine. If you continuously bring a battery down to, say, 50% discharge on a daily basis, that battery will not last long at all, maybe a few years, but no more. If you discharge a battery every day down to, say, 20%, in other words, down to 80% capacity, it should last for many years. If you're lucky enough to score some lithium batteries, these rules go out the window, as lithium batteries can be discharged to 0% every day and cope just fine. However, if you want 5 days of autonomy, that means by definition you can't discharge the battery by more than 20% per day, or it won't last the 5 days. If you're paying more for a lithium battery for this purpose, then you're throwing money away. Lithium really comes into its own only when you want only a day of autonomy. Now let's talk about managing the battery for prolonged life and fitness for purpose. For an extended battery life and reliability, there are a few things that need to be considered. Each day, the battery will discharge around 10% over the course of the night, unless you live south of the Antarctic Circle. To recharge, you need to do what is called a boost charge. This is roughly 14.5 volts, depending on the battery design. Once the battery is approaching full charge again, the charging volts need to come down to something closer to normal battery operating voltage, say roughly 13.8 volts DC. If you only do the boost charge followed by the float charge, eventually the battery will develop issues where a cell of a battery will gradually degrade and the others will try to compensate at an ever-increasing rate, and the battery or the battery bank will gradually reduce in capacity. To fix this, about once a month we do what's called an equalisation charge. This is where we saturate charge the battery at a higher voltage still, say around 15.7 volts DC for a 12-volt DC battery bank. And this equalises the charge on all cells and batteries to combat the gradual decline of single cells or batteries. This is all good, but generally only mobile radios are designed to cope with such a wide range of DC voltages. At best, the purpose-built base radio or repeater will vary its maximum power output depending on the battery voltage, and at worst will expire at voltages above 15 volts DC and higher. To manage this, we need to limit the voltage fed to the equipment to 13.8 volts DC, but still maintain the battery charger regime to keep the life expectation of the battery going. How do we do that? We could use a 12 to 12 volt DC converter, or better still, design a system for, say, 48 volts DC, then employ a 48 to 12 volt DC converter. This allows you to maintain 13.8 volts DC even when the battery bank is depleted. Not much point in having 5 days of autonomy if the last 2 days of that are less than 12 volts DC and the radio fails in any case. Building a 48 volt DC system against a 12 volt DC system isn't much different or expensive. The power delivery is the same, it's just that you need to have 4 batteries or battery banks in series to provide the 48 volt DC bank instead of 12 volts DC. Most solar regulators are programmable for 12, 24 or 48 volt DC battery banks. So we have now a well-maintained and reliable battery bank. How do we keep it charged? Well, you'll need to listen to the news broadcast next week for the second half of this sermon. Thanks for listening. This is Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
This is VK6ARN.
The VK6 Digital VoiceNet held its first Tuesday meeting at 4 p.m. last Tuesday on 40 metres. There were 4 participants. Individuals have subsequently met informally at 4 p.m. on 40 meters. Here is a snippet of audio from one such session this week.
But Bob's having a bit of trouble with his antenna, but again, I'm hitting him pretty well here at the moment. It looks like he's got me at, sevens and fives and things like that. So I don't know if you want to try again there, Bob. VK6 POP. VK6 Kilo Romeo.
VK6 Kilo Romeo and VK6 Dalton Whiskey from VK6 POP. Yeah, going okay here. I can't turn my head far enough to see if you're if you're receiving me okay. But yeah, you both sound pretty good, Ian. Your voice sounds quite natural at this end, so you must have got it just
right. We're using the FreeDV app, which you can download from freedv.org. FreeDV is an open source project, and you can install it on Windows, macOS, and Linux varieties. To be able to both receive and transmit, your computer must have two sound cards. Typically, one of those is built into the computer, and the other a USB dongle or headset. The setup of the software is fairly straightforward, and there is help available on the website if required. We will keep the set time for the net on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Perth time, on 40 meters, and casually on any day at 4 p.m. You can determine the actual frequency we are on by looking along the columns of DV Reporter to the column headed megahertz. Read more about FreeDV on the website, freedv.org.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The other day I was stuck in traffic behind a vehicle proudly proclaiming that it was electric. I'd seen the model before, just never connected it with being available as an EV. I wondered how many other cars on the road turned out to have added an electric option to their lineup, and how that evolution had just quietly, inexorably occurred. It started me thinking about the nature of the driving experience and what it would be like for someone who has never seen a petrol or other fossil fuel burning vehicle, and what driver education might do to incorporate that. In my teens, I first sat on a hotted-up moped belonging to a friend. I was old enough to be legal whilst he wasn't, so I got to ride his bike to school with him on the back. Win-win for both. Later on, I learned to drive a car with a manual gearbox, and as interest took me, I learned to drive a double-clutch gearbox and got my heavy, rigid truck license. I also learned to fly a plane, but that's beside the point. Stuck in rush hour traffic, such as it is in Perth, it made me think about amateur radio licensing and education. Specifically, how do we incorporate change? When I was first licensed, my education included consideration for analog television interference, including pictures of different screen patterns, their causes and remedies. 3 years after I got licensed, almost to the day, the last analog television transmitter in Australia was switched off on 10 December 2013, 57 years after the first transmission started. While I retain little, if any, of the now, let's call it esoteric, information associated with that, it made me consider a wider picture in relation to the process of amateur radio education. New amateurs today are unlikely to be asked about analog television interference, let alone be subjected to questions in their exam. Fair enough, information changes, evolves, becomes superseded or expires. And as a side effect, I have some brain cells dedicated to analog television. PAL, 625 lines total, 576 visible, horizontal and vertical synchronization, white noise, you get the idea. As an aside, 78 on a turntable indicates a speed reserved for shellac records until the 1950s. Seeing that we're dropping arcane knowledge. Oh, dollar EA means NOP on a 6502, in case you're wondering. Although I don't have a specific list of what is currently being taught, more on that in a moment, I dare say that newly minted amateurs have a curriculum that has evolved with technology and legal requirements over the past 15 years. A tangible example is the fact that the foundation class in Australia is now permitted to use digital modes, something that changed after I was licensed, when on 21 September 2019 the regulator amended the Amateur License Conditions Determination, known locally as the LCD, with immediate effect. The point being that over time things change and education changes with it. This is all as expected. Here's my question. What about the rest of the community? What happens to someone who has been licensed for a decade, a generation, or more? Are they expected to gain these skills by osmosis or self-education? Should this process be dictated by the regulator, or should this be a community effort to bring everyone into the same decade? Should we revise how we educate our amateurs and make the education skill set technology agnostic? Should we be less prescriptive with the license, or should it achieve something else? One example in this space is an initiative called the Ham Challenge, which you can discover at hamchallenge.org. In case it sounds vaguely familiar, I've talked about this before. It's a list of 52 activities that you can take on to broaden your horizons and explore different aspects of our hobby. In its first year, I'm looking forward to seeing how it evolves. Is this the kind of self-training that we might encourage, or is there another way to achieve this? Is this something that occurs elsewhere in society, and if so, how has that been addressed? I know, for example, in ICT, there are endless certification courses, which I have to confess are, in my professional opinion, absolutely counterproductive, serving only to entrench vendor lock-in, not something that I think benefits the amateur community. I mentioned curriculum a moment ago. Another approach is to attend a licensing course and participate as part of your own self-education. Of course, this will require cooperation from the educators, and we'd need to come up with some idea of how this might be useful. Is this something that benefits from attendance every 5 years, every decade, more, less? As a bonus side effect, it will introduce new amateurs to old ones and vice versa, perhaps facilitating a new resurgence of elmering or mentorship that previously has been the hallmark of our community. Over the decade and a half or so that I've been licensed and writing weekly articles about the hobby and our community, I have made a conscious effort to keep up to date, to learn new skills, to share what I've learnt, to actively explore what I need to learn more about, and to share that journey with you. I realise that this is not a universal experience. For some, their amateur license sits in a drawer gathering dust together with their first aid certificate and their first runner-up prize for something that for a minute and a half caught their attention years ago. For most of us, the reality lies somewhere in between. For many, the amateur experience is one of playing on air and getting delight from the doing and participating. There are those who go out and become teachers, those who sit on boards, those who run clubs, and those who get on the local repeater once a week. It takes all of us to make this community, and my thoughts are not intended to stop that enjoyment and experience. I'm trying to discover how we build a resilient community, one that is sustainable in a world of continuous and rapid change. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima, Alpha Bravo.
The Northern Corridor Radio Group gathers for a chat, cooked breakfast, and work on current projects every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Visitors and prospective new members are always welcome. The club is on Nangara Road at Whiteman Park on the first right turn after the Tonkin Highway entrance when travelling east towards Allenbrook. The club has an excellent station with multiple operating rooms, an EME station, a remote station for all members to use, club repeaters on 2 metres, 70 cms and 23 centimetres, and a bunch of other activities for members of all interests.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
Hi, I'm Bob VK6POP, speaking to you via text-to-speech, as my voice has been compromised by a nasty virus. During the week, the December edition of the Radio Amateur Society of Australia's QTC magazine was published. QTC is available for download or viewing at the RASA website, vkradioamateurs.org. In this issue of QTC, we bring you Getting to Know Norfolk Island. It's more than just a DX location, which is a report on the VK9 NT de-expedition. There's an amusing account of amateur radio in the movies. Why can't they get it right? We publish a recent message from the ACMA about amateur radio for under-15s. The recent social media bans for this age group them from creating an ACMA assist account. ACMA offers a workaround to under-15s. Are you thinking of operating portable this summer? we bring you a list of essential items for portable summertime operation. A RASA team member attended QTech 2025 and has reported on what happened there. Antennapalooza for 2026 has been announced. Read the latest detail for this popular event. Yes, it's in Victoria. However, if you're planning a trip in that direction, or need an excuse to do so, read all about Antennapalooza. There is the regular DITS and DARA's CW column with news and encouragements from the CW realm. And have you ever wondered why an iambic telegraph key is so named? Find out why. QTC is a monthly magazine compiled by the Radio Amateur Society of Australia. QTC is produced entirely in-house, which is why it can be offered to everyone free of charge, because it costs next to nothing to produce. QTC is available as a downloadable PDF, or can be viewed online as a true online magazine. All links in QTC are hot. You just click on the link, and your extra information appears in a new window. QTC is found at vkradioamateurs.org. That's vkradioamateurs.org.
A brief update from the West Australian Repeater Group. WAG is still hoping to do a working bee next week at the Tick Hill site, VK6RTH, to start getting the new 23 SEM repeater on air. Still confirming the exact date and time. If anyone who would like to attend could please email secretary@whiskeyalfaromeogolf.org.au. We'll be able to provide advice of exactly when we are going, all being well. Thank you.
Good morning, campers. Following on from the successful events over the last few years, the Southern Electronics Group Mike Beale Memorial Hamcamption will be on again for 2026. Save the date in your calendar, 15th to the 17th of May. The camping weekend has been greatly enjoyed by all who attend, either to camp or to day trip on the Saturday. There will be more information in the new year, but for those who have attended before, we'll be following the same format. We hope to see you there. This is Darren, VK6EK, for the Southern Electronics Group.
Good morning. I'm at a radio disposals helpline for the 14th of December 2025. I have the following for you. Rob, VK6 Fox Romeo Lima Romeo, is looking for an antenna tuning unit similar to the, or as same as the, Mike Fox Juliet 16010. That's an MFJ 16010 or the MFJ 956 manual antenna tuning unit, all very similar, and it's for a HF receiver. Cash is waiting, pocket full of cash, burning a hole in the pocket. So if you have one, please contact Rob. His email address is romeo charlie alpha uniform tango oscar papa alpha romeo tango sierra 1 at iinet.net.au, or your mobile text. You can text him on 043 999 7863. It's 043 999 7863, phone or text. Next, I have possibly Alan, who still has a Kodan 8525 HF radio transceiver with a 13.8 volt power supply, the Kodan 9114 to suit that radio. Comes with an EEPROM program with 50 channels, including Austravel and amateur frequencies, and with an installation and operating instruction included. And will only sell to appropriately licensed commercial or amateur operator, or remove the EEPROM. For further details, contact Alan, VK6 X-Ray Lima. His phone number, 0458 472 235, 0458 472 235. And that's all I have for you for today. If you have any items for next week or the following weeks or into the new year, please contact me. Email vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com is the only email address you need. And until we meet again, 73, happy Christmas. Roy, VK6XV73.
Thank you once again, Roy. And that brings us to the end of the broadcast for another week. I'd like to thank all of you for listening, and especially thank the broadcasters, relay stations, and everyone who submitted items for the news. We're always looking for more. If you've got something newsworthy, record it in MP3, preferably 256kbit mono, or whatever you can, and then email it to newswest@vk6.net, along with your contact details, in case we need to follow anything up. Callbacks will follow this broadcast on most frequencies. If you happen to be listening on a frequency with no callback, why not put out a call yourself? Note any stations who reply and send us the numbers. Even if there's just you listening, that's one. So, you've either been listening to or you've just missed News West. All being well, we'll do this again next week. Until then, 7-3 from VK6ARN.